with Kizik Hands-Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Just a programming note, this podcast was recorded at the end of February before all the shutdowns across the US and the UK, but it was too good to hold back. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Romy Gill.
Hello, beautiful people. You are listening to the Communal Table Podcast, part of Food and Wine Pro. My guest today, luckily the second time is a charm. Our signals have been crossed. We've been trying to get around for a while. I fell in love with this woman when I saw her present at Mad Symposium a couple years ago. She is a chef. She is an educator. She is a TV and radio presenter. And now she has this incredible cookbook, Zaika, Vegan Recipes from India. She's also a member of the British Empire, which we will get to discussing. Welcome, Romy Gill. Oh my gosh, Romy, this book, Zaika. Okay, holding it up for the people who are actually watching it, not just listening. This is a work of art. I want a framed poster of this on my wall. Congratulations on this book.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for introducing the book. It's a book, something really from my heart, and a homage to my mom, which she passed away sadly last year. But this is the food I grew up eating when I was growing up in India. So I wanted to kind of write the food that I grew up eating as a child, share with my friends. So Zaika is all about flavors of my childhood.
I love it. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in India, in West Bengal, which is East India. But my parents are from North India.
Okay.
So I grew up in a very multicultural community. My dad used to work in a steel plant, and people from all states came to work there. So from Indian food is not just Indian. Indian food is
my God. There's so many micro cuisines that happen. I mean, it's a massive, massive place.
It is. It's a regional food. There's so many different languages we speak. We look different. We wear different clothes. Mm-hmm. And but the spices stay the same. Spices never change.
Really? Okay. So, I had assumed that there would be more sort of regionally oriented spices and stuff, but there's a standard palette.
There is, like the cumin, coriander, garam masala, which is a blend of spices, mm-hmm. There are mustard seeds these things kind of everybody has them in their cupboard. Mm-hmm. Or tandoori masala, again, a different kind of blend of spices. And chaat masala, which is the street food, kind of that is what I grew up. And people mostly have those in their cupboards, but then people make their own blends at home.
Right, yes.
So they think the spices are actually, you'll have pepper and cinnamon and different parts will have saffron as well, like in Kashmir or mm-hmm. Awadhi cuisine, which is from Lucknow, they use a lot of saffron. So we use those ingredients, all the spices, but in a very different way.
Yeah, I love this so much. And this is a vegan book.
It is, yes.
You yourself do not adhere?
No, I eat meat. My daughters are vegetarian. And they've actually saw this documentary and they converted.
Which
them.
One is it? Forks Over Knives? There's so many of them now.
So they, for the moment, they're teenagers. They want to be, let them be. Because I think it's really important to understand what is happening to the world, and very important where the food comes from. Plus, respect the ingredients, what you're eating or cooking with. I think for me, writing this book was when I grew up in India. My parents couldn't speak English. My dad worked really hard, made sure all three of their kids went to English medium and private school. So for them, it was very, very important. The education was very important to them. And also the food that my mom would cook, her life was all around us, always. The four meals, hot meals she would cook for, breakfast in the morning, or she would pack lunches for us. When we came back from school, she'll have snacks ready for us. And then in the evening, she'll cook the dinner for the whole family. It was all about wholesome food, comforting food. We have so much lentil, pulses, different kinds of flours, gluten-free flours. We have a lot, ragi, which is corn flour, like the the corn which we eat, we also make chapatis with that. Mm. So there are so many different things that we ate, and seasonal vegetables was very important.
Seasonality is such a huge thing. I mean, I grew up with my mother, bless her, fed us, but not with, it was out of duty rather than any sort of love of food. It's sort of an interesting thing. Like, she always loved eating, but not food. It's, you know, and it's sort of different activities. Like, she liked, you know, getting people together around the table and actually like consuming food, but not sort of as much caring about like sort of what the food is. And most of the recipes were high school home ec. And in my family, on that, especially on that side, the culture was kind of erased because both of my grandparents were first generation American, and my grandmother's parents died when she was very young, and she was raised by a German housekeeper, so she didn't get the Italian. And they were both very Italian, so they didn't get the recipes. And then my grandfather just encountered so much racism where he was in Pennsylvania. His mother didn't speak English, and so and he. This always breaks my heart. Wouldn't eat garlic because he didn't want to smell Italian, because he knew that people would judge him for that. And so we didn't get that kind of stuff. So my mother would make these meals, but it was kind of the most generic things and nothing seasonal. It was frozen things and canned things. So I've, as an adult, come to appreciate that. But for you, it was always just something. It's this season, so we eat this thing.
I think also that, and I'm as a first generation in the UK, so my husband and myself.
You live in Bristol.
Bristol, yes, in England. We are the first generation, and my daughters are now teenagers. They're born in that. So England is my homeland. UK is my homeland. I come from a homeland from India, born and brought up there. But I was very young when I moved
to UK. You were 17?
22 was quite young. You know, you're naive.
You're a little baby.
You know, also different cultures, the way you're brought up. And I think for me, this was not a book that, because the trend is going on about vegan.
Right.
You know, it was something that I cherished as my mom memory, although the travel we did, like long journeys, you know, she would make these beautiful picnics. So I think that I wanted something very close to my heart, and I wanted people to pick up a book. Yes, recipes are very important, but also telling a story is very important.
This book is a love letter to your mother.
Yes, it is.
Really, everything comes through with that. And you write in there about moving to England and using the food as a bridge to, because you were lonely.
It was. I mean, you know, you when you come from a different country. Yes, you could speak English, but also at the same time, you leave your friends, the friends you grew up with. You leave the family, and above all, the food you leave all that, and you come and you have to make new friends. You have to do that. Otherwise, I think you will go insane.
Right.
You know, it's something, and also food kind of connects people. And make the bridges come closer rather than apart. Yeah. And people sharing those stories as food stories. I think food became, I think it's also saved me in many ways.
Let's talk about that.
It saved me, you know, as I came from India, and my husband, you know, he's amazing. He's lovely. Yeah. He's a great man. But I think what I went through a journey, I wouldn't want that to happen to anybody, you know?
Yeah.
It's something, I don't talk much about it, but only recently that I've started to talk about it. I think it is important to share that women of certain age, women of color, if you want to achieve something, you can do it, you know?
And I think it takes people like you who are willing to go out and talk in public. And I mean, I'll say that women of color and women of a certain age are not given media time and camera time and all that until maybe the tide has shifted more recently. So people didn't necessarily always have somebody to look to in magazines and on screen and things. We were talking before we got on here about Madhur Jaffrey and how she broke so much ground.
She opened doors so for us, me, for a lot of women in the industry, especially Indian women. She opened that door, and we are here because of that as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to cherish that, because Madhur Jaffrey is something beautiful. She has this energy, this kindness about her, and this larger than life, you know, right. Tiny little lady, but beautiful lady.
Yeah.
She is fantastic. And I have, I admire her a lot. And I think also women like my mom, you know,
yeah.
A beautiful lady who loved, enjoyed cooking. And
what's her name?
Her name was Balwant. And she, Balwant means strong lady. she was strong. She had, when I was doing my GCSEs, I don't know if you know the GCSEs, like 10th grade,
okay.
Very important part to go on to then do the A-levels. She was diagnosed with cancer. And my mom's life was, as I said, was so much about food. And then she couldn't taste food because she used to kind of put so much salt in the food. And I said to my dad, "Dad, I really would like to go in the hospitality industry and I want to be a chef." Within seconds, he said, "No way." He said, "Because you won't survive." Because
right.
still in India, very handful of women chefs around, you know.
And the men are the ones who get all the press for
exactly,
it.
Exactly, exactly. Any television shows you watch, you know, are all about men on the TV in India as well. So I think in a way he was right. And sometimes as a youngster, you think that your parents are, you know, not giving the opportunity you want to. But in a certain way, he was very, many ways he was mm-hmm. correct. But I think if you have something in you and you mm-hmm. want to do something, you will do it. And I mean, you know, kind of I am that kind of person.
Yeah.
And then the doctor said to my dad and we were little that she hasn't got long to live, my mm-hmm. mom, you know. But she lived more than 40 years.
That's
she was a
so
strong lady,
oh
you know.
And having, I was actually having a conversation with a colleague early today, as she and I both grew up with mothers who were sick in various ways. That's a really hard thing when you are young. Also, when you're older,
yes.
That the person who is in theory supposed to take care of you and stuff needs care. And I feel like this is a common thread for a lot of people who go into hospitality, that you end up wanting to take care of everybody. Like, I know that when my mother was unable to sort of cook for the family, mm-hmm. I thought, well, guess it's going to be me now, and learned how to cook. And my friend was saying too about sort of coping in the face of that. And you just want to end up feeding people. And but it's also hard if somebody is having a hard time eating, and it's
yeah.
a really rough time. So when you're doing these things, how old are you?
I was like about 15, 14, 15.
Were you cooking at this? At
no,
this
my
point?
Dad's a great cook.
Oh, yeah.
He would.
You've spoken so well of your dad. I love it.
Do you know what? He would go to work, mm-hmm. work really hard, and my mom would still do it, mm-hmm. you know? She was such a strong, amazing lady. And he would come home and do everything. He was like, no, you've got to study. You've got to become something of yourself, you know? And I think, and he enjoyed cooking, and it was something. It was stress relief for him
yeah.
as well, you know?
That's such a lovely thing. And, you know, feeding people is such a very particular act, and it's something that we can do even if we can't articulate our feelings
yes.
always. Like giving somebody, you know, a dish of something is a really great caretaking kind of way. And I know that, you know, food is used in so many different ways. When there's a sickness, a funeral, you know, something, people
yeah.
show up with dishes.
It is. I think it's a celebrations of grief, of celebrations mm-hmm. of sadness, happiness.
Yeah.
Everything is food. I mean, if you have different 10 different people from different communities, from mm-hmm. different, who speak different languages, but if you bring the food and you don't understand the language, the food will speak the language.
Yeah.
So I think food is connection between so many people in many different ways. I think that is what for me is a medium that, you know, my daughters have grown up and they're very, you know, they are very sensible and they are capable of making things for themselves. Mm-hmm. But also they've grown up with good food. You
right.
know? So they've grown up with good food and they understand the flavors so well. For me, I think with Indian food, for any kind of food, seasoning is so important.
Yeah.
I think that was one thing that I couldn't understand when mom had cancer.
Right.
You know, she was not able to, you know, have the seasons she wanted. So I think that really molded me up, shaped my life in mm-hmm. many ways for what I am today and made me stronger. And I could see how strong she was. And I became a strong lady. I fought to be where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it's always there are people, you need to ask people. I didn't have a godfather in the industry. Mm-hmm. And there was no one to hold my hand and say, "This is I'm your mentor, I'll help you." Mm-hmm. I didn't have any of that. And I think you have to write to people. You have to connect with people. And the people will say either no or yes. And if somebody's in a good mood, they might say yes. So I say that too. And also very important to have mentors.
So how did you find it? So you moved to the UK, you're 22 and trying to find community in various ways and things. How did you decide? Your father said, like, no, don't go into restaurants, don't do that thing. When did that switch flip for you? Because you come to food in various ways as a chef, as an educator, as a radio and TV presenter, as a cookbook author. So how did this career take shape from little 22-year-old Romy?
I think I was extremely excited to come to UK. And then the excitement after a couple of weeks was like really depressing weather, really cold. And also, I never seen supermarkets before. It might be petty things for some people. I never seen a supermarket because supermarkets exist in India now. But that time, no, we had local tiny shops. We supported the local produce. We supported the local, people who had local shops. Mm-hmm. So I think that is what I grew up with. And when I came here, 20 different kinds of yogurt, avocados for seeing for first time, you know, and there is all this meat, all these vegetables. I mean, that was all the excitement and all the buildings and all this kind of thing. But it was really depressing for me at the times when the weather was quite cold and dark. I think that my husband took me out for a meal, said, let's go to Indian food. And I was super excited to go out and eat. And then we went to this beautiful restaurant and the food, when it came out, it looked all the same, tasted all the same. And I was like, what is this? Is not Indian food. But this was the Bangladeshi's restaurant serving Indian food. But the thing is, I have a lot of respect for them because if those people did not introduce the British people with the spices, with the curries that people in 1950s or, and you know, they didn't introduce, I wouldn't be here today. Because they opened the door for us. They're the one who introduced the British people to all the spicy food. But I necessarily wouldn't be eating that food. So I grew up in a very different kind of way of eating food. It was quite sweet food. It was food with colorings. But, you know, that is 5 pints of lager and a curry. There's always a place for people.
Right. Because I always think of it as sort of Brick Lane curry.
Yes.
And it's, best if you're a little drunk.
Yes.
And it's really delicious and things, but it's so different from the cuisine that I think of as being sort of regional Indian cuisine.
Exactly. I think those restaurants are amazing and they have a place in the UK heart because I think we should not forget that because they made the curry houses and they brought us to the British people who can understand the food. And then years later, a lot of wonderful restaurants opened and then came to show. I don't know if you've eaten in Disham.
It's always been too crowded for me to go when I've been in London.
So I think there were Michelin star restaurants, but Disham was the restaurant that actually completely changed the food scene, Indian food scene. Because people from young ages, people from older generation or people with money, with people with less money could go and eat there. So they wanted everybody to be equal there.
Yeah.
I think that's the ethos. And Shamil, who is the owner, he's fantastic, very knowledgeable, very amazing guy. And I think they completely changed the food scene. And my daughters love it as well. I think Disham, for me as well, and for many others, was something that you can go and eat there. Yes, there's long queues. But there are a few of them in town now, so you can actually choose the one to want to go to.
I'm never in London long enough. I need to make more time to go there. And I feel like in New York, because we've always had, you know, Sixth Street and then Floyd Cardoz came along and opened some beautiful places. And, you know, as he continues to do, and that sort of opened it up for more chefs. I think the thing that people needed to get over in New York is they had thought of it as being inexpensive and, you know, celebrational and all that kind of stuff. But that people, and again, this is one of those funding questions, people weren't given the money to do high-end Indian restaurants and stuff.
Exactly.
So as that's changed over the past bunch of years or something, it's been really a joy and a revelation to be able to see this, all these cuisines really celebrated in the manner that they are supposed to be and not just sort of a quick fix kind of thing.
I mean, it's changing. I always say to people that when I come to New York, the Indian food scene is changing. It's taken a long time, but it is changing. And people are also want to taste the food. People are able to understand actually the Indian food, you know?
Yeah.
And then you guys have amazing food writers, journalists.
Yes, we do.
You know? You know, so everything is changing. It takes time. But I think what we had in UK is now you guys are going to have that suddenly.
And I will also say you could always go out to Jackson Heights and
have
some really great stuff. So I think I was thinking about that in a particular Manhattan-centric kind of way. But yeah, you could always go out to Jackson Heights where people actually live and are cooking for themselves and the ingredients are available.
And also, you know, not very expensive either and very tasty.
Yeah. And the thing I always, the regret I always hear from friends of mine who grew up in India and live here is that we can't get all the mangoes. We get like one or two different kinds of mangoes or something. But I've also seen chefs really sort of adapt and use what is around them. Like Vishpat, who lives in Oxford, Mississippi, like he cooks Southern food, you know, with like some Indian flavors and stuff. And he was like, well, I guess we have peaches here, so I'm going to adapt and use peaches for what I do. And he's come up with like just... Oh, he's so special. I can't wait for his cookbook to come out.
I think you have to. When I moved to UK, I couldn't drive. So I didn't know how to drive. So the specialty shops were far away.
Right.
You know? So I couldn't drive and I was scared to go on a bus in case I got lost.
Right.
And also phones were not a necessity. Everybody didn't have mobiles like we have. But you had those big brick.
I remember those. Yes.
So I think... So I was, you know, quite nervous about going to certain places which I was not comfortable in. So I would adapt whatever I could find from supermarkets or local shops and I would make. And this is how I used to ring my mom. Mom, I've picked, you know, this something, this is looks like this. What do I do with it? She would say, just add some spices and try this. And the avocado, I still don't like the taste of it.
Yeah.
But if I'm making chutney, there's one in here, mint and coriander with avocado and apple. It's beautiful. You know, it's not like it's like a chutney. Like we make a lot of fresh chutneys in India. And it works well. You know, you have to adapt with things. You have to find the fish. I live in Southwest. Devon is the most wonderful fish, seafood you get. So I will cook the fish from UK and not wait from India to get the frozen one.
Right.
You know, so for me, I think you have to adapt as a chef. You have to create new dishes. And also, it's important that what others are going to, how it's going to affect your taste for others.
Right.
So you have to adapt all that, you know. You cannot, nowadays, we live in a world that has become really... you know, it's becoming smaller and smaller. We travel a lot with food. We understand.
Yeah.
I think that's what I loved about Anthony Bourdain he had his flaws. Yes, he had it. Everybody
has. He's a human being.
We all do.
Right.
But do you know what? He gave so much respect to the country he went to.
Yeah.
And he would say to live in the shoes of the people, try the food. Even if you are not able to afford to go foreign land, try to be in the country you're living in and try the food. I think that is so important.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't judge someone from how you look or the food it is. You have to taste the food of that person.
Yeah, and sit down and have a conversation. And I think one of the things I always appreciated about him was that he opened up the world for a lot of people who I think so many people operate from a place of fear. I mean, and we're the culture in the US, and I know it's similarly difficult in the UK right now, there's this messaging being hammered to us from politicians to be afraid of people who are different from us or come from a different place. And the truth of it is we wouldn't be who we are. Our lives would be so much smaller without people who came in from somewhere else to offer a perspective of a bigger world, who are kind enough to offer their culture to, who have taken the risk to go somewhere else. And I think that should be rewarded instead of be feared.
Yeah.
And this political climate that we're in just disturbs and disgusts me.
Mm.
And, you know, I know it's cliche to talk about food or reduce and say like, oh, this will bridge us all because it can only go so far. But it can get people together around a table, ideally, I hope.
It does. I mean, look at England. Look at us. We are done Brexit. You know, what is wrong
I'm
with
so sorry.
It? I know. And it's brought racism back. It was, yeah.
Oh, it was
never,
always there, I think.
It was there, yeah. But people have actually become really open about, you know, they're yeah. really aggressive towards you. And what's your profession as well? The way, I mean, recently, I've never in 20 years been asked. I was going on a first class. It was a TV shoot. I was going there. Mm-hmm. I was sitting in the coach, which was first class. And this lady came and asked me, can you show your ticket? And in
like
not,
a passenger? Or?
No, ticket collector.
Okay.
And she never asked anybody else.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So it's clearly that it was there, but it's actually people are more, not, you know, they just do these things. And I laughed because what else could you do? I didn't want to shout at her. I didn't want to be like her. And the people who were sitting beside me and said, why didn't you say anything? You know, the people were really nice and they said, why didn't you say anything? I said, it doesn't matter. I am just not going to be negative.
Well, they also could have said, like, hey, why are you asking her? I mean, I think that's the thing that I've sort of had to learn as a white person is to, like, use my privilege to yell at people in a way because I, you know, I have the privilege of being able to do that. Now I sort of realize, like, oh, it's my responsibility to, which I should have been doing all along, to question these sort of things and, you know, give voice to people who, you know, are being affected by this stuff.
I think voice, you can do, we can all do, give a voice to people, yes, political in many ways, mm-hmm. but also through food. Talk about people through food.
Yeah.
You know,
on the podcast, we try to very much bring in just, you know, all different kinds of people to share their story. Everybody's got a story worth telling.
Yes.
They really do. And so I'm curious also then, I want to go back to this about so you're there and you're trying to find your way out to markets and things. How did you realize that there was a place for you as a professional in this? Because it's one thing to absolutely love food and be passionate about it and share it as a gift. And there's another thing to take the risk to make your living from it.
I think going back to the question was when I went out with my husband and the colors. And then I was... what is this? And I said, that's it. I am opening a restaurant.
No experience, nothing.
And he was like, this lady is going to open a restaurant. She's not going to. And he didn't say anything to me. 20 years later, I did. But then once I've had my kids, my daughter was very young. Mm-hmm. She was a tiny baby, 2 months old or 3 months old. And I just started writing to different restaurants. I started writing to cookery schools that, please don't pay me. Please let me learn how to do it. Yeah. I want to come and learn. I want to teach. And also I had a really dear friend who became a friend through school, my daughter's preschool and stuff, my eldest. And she said, Romy, you're good at talking. Please teach people.
Yeah.
We need that. Teach people how to do that. And that actually gave me really encouragement because you need the push.
Yeah.
You need that push. You know you can do it. I think she pushed me. Mm-hmm. And I have acknowledged her in that book because she was one of those first people who kind of said, yes, you should do this. And also I think that gave me, I started making samosas. I can close my eyes and make samosas now. I started making samosas, chutneys, pickles, sauces from my home. You know, I started my business from my home. That is why my restaurant was called Romy's Kitchen, because, you know, I started that from my kitchen. And I think then I started street food, local farm shops, you know, local fairs, everything. And then eventually I found this place where I live in my town in Thornbury. I did not want to open a restaurant because my daughter was very little.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to open a restaurant that far, far away that I couldn't, if something happened, I wouldn't be able to reach to them. So I saw this beautiful building and it's a great two-listed building. It took me 3.5 years, Kat, to get the planning permission.
Wow.
Anybody in the right mind would have given it up.
Thank God you're not.
So I fought for that. And then 9 months of the builders taking long time. Of course, she's a woman. It's fine. She'll, you know, and then banks refused a loan.
Yeah.
So banks wouldn't give me a loan because A, I was a woman. First time women opening a restaurant. And thirdly, a woman of color.
Yeah.
So everything was going against. And I said to my husband, I'm not going to give this up. I had a lot of gold jewelry and savings and other things. things. I said, I rang my parents and I said, I don't wear this gold jewelry, which is yellow. My daughter's never going to wear this. Can I sell it? I said, it was given to you. Yes, do it. And we did. Because I just think that instead of banks not giving me loan, I can do that.
Yeah.
But then BBC came and they did a feature on me. They heard from someone that the banks are refusing her loan. And yet the government gives the banks for small businesses to give the money. So they did this feature. Next day, NatWest gave me a loan. So the power of media.
Yes, you know. Yes, indeed.
So I think that was amazing. So it worked really well. I think also sheer determination, and also I think you have to believe in something. You'd be proving yourself is fine. You know, you need to prove it to yourself rather than anybody else.
Oh, we are our harshest critics.
Yes.
It's, I don't know anyone who is worse to me than me.
Yeah, we are, you know. And then that happened. It was, it became a successful restaurant. But, Kat, none of the food writers came to write about me.
Why is that?
I was far away from London. Mm-hmm. And also, I think I didn't have a PR. I didn't want it to pay for the PR. I didn't, I spent every money on the restaurant to open that, you know, beautiful restaurant. And I think I said to my staff, sorted, I'm going to London. I'm going to do a pop-up there. I've been asked to do this. I'm going to go for 2 weeks in January. This is it. I said to my staff, take a week off, 10 days off. Next week, I won't be here. You guys are going to manage this. And I'm going to London and say, Carousel, I haven't acknowledged them in the book. They changed my life. Mm-hmm. So Carousel is a place where they bring all the chefs from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And you do a residency.
For how long?
You can do for 1 week. You can do for 2 weeks. So they said, Romy, we will only give you in January. What you'll have to do for 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And I cried. Because January is the dead month for chefs.
It's so hard. People go out to restaurants in the cold months. It's
dead. And I thought, you know what? Just do it. First day, I had like 20 people. Mm-hmm. And I just burst down into tears. I said, what am I doing here?
Right.
Nobody wants to come and eat. And you know, the next day, Faye Mashlon, she's a food critic, amazing food for Evening Standard. She came and she loved my food and wrote a little snippet in there, said, you know, that I'm doing this residency. Kat, I've been doing this for 4 years now. Yeah. This will be my 5th year. I couldn't do it in January because I was filming. And so I'm doing in May. And they completely changed my life. And she and Carousel completely changed my life. So food critics like Gay Strand, a lot of other people, Richard Vines, they all came to eat there. And a lot of chefs came to eat and supported me. And I think that that was it. People then started coming to my restaurant.
That's so lovely.
So I think you have to go and get it. You don't have to wait for somebody to hand it to you. So I think I just did it. And I was really lucky enough that Faye came. She loved the food. So people, like, every January, every time it gets fully booked. And you know, the guys in Carousel are amazing. So I think you have to go and get it for yourself. I think people noticed me. That's how BBC noticed me and got this TV series I'm doing. Or I do this food and farming radio for Vishila Dhillon, you know, which Dan Saladino is producer as well.
Oh,
sometimes.
He's so wonderful.
But my producer is Claire Salisbury. She's a fantastic young lady and I love her to bit. And I work with Vishila Dhillon. So these and Claire McGinn, who is a radio for, she was the program head at that time. So I think all these women has actually really helped me somehow in some way. And men, you know, everybody's equally helped me in some kind of way. And I think it's very, very important to acknowledge these people. Never forget who put you there, because it's so important. I think we forget that when you become that person and become very well known. Like when I was traveling in airlines recently, and when I came to New York, and this air stewardess came to me, are you the chef? Are you Romy? I said, yes. And she was, can I take a picture with you? Can you sign me, give me if you have a book, I want you to sign it in a piece of paper and I will put that in my, in the book. I said, don't worry, I have a book for you.
Oh,
I signed
it
and gave it to her. I think that is something Carousel changed, you know, for me. So I think, I love those guys a bit, because I think you can do what you are good at it, but also somebody has to give that little push to you.
It really helps so much. You and I have been talking, I think, before we started recording about the importance of finding a mentor.
So important.
But also then being one once you get...
Oh, wow.
And
yes.
I've seen you lift up so many people. Mm. How do people seek you out? How do they find you? How do they reach out? And then how do you deal with the onslaught of attention, because you are a public person, you are on the radio and TV and all of that, and that is increasingly part of being a chef.
Yes,
but it also takes a chunk out of you as a human. How do you walk that line?
I think when I opened the restaurant, I just didn't want to be a woman who just woke up and opened a restaurant. You know, a lot of people were there for me to fail. There were a lot of men wanted, chefs were waiting for me to fail. Mm. I didn't want to give that satisfaction. plus, at the same time, I didn't want it to be Romy's Kitchen and Romy in there and that's it, lost. I wanted to give, you know, men, especially women or men, that actually she's done it and I can do it. I want to do in the business. And I just think that it's so important to help. When you are in a position to help people, you should help. It's so, so important, because there are so many young generation, young boys, young men, young women bullied in this industry sometimes, you know. But if you find a right mentor, you can help them.
Yeah.
How you can do this, it's so important. Any industry, I think. And if somebody approaches me on Instagram, I never, ever, or Twitter, or anywhere, or email, I never say no to them. I still don't have an agent, Kat. I don't have an agent.
Oh my gosh, so you really are just doing all this on your own. I expected you to roll in with the team. And...
I think I will need an agent soon. It's just happening too much too soon.
Dear
which is
agents, pick up from me.
I think it's so important that you actually... talk to people. You reply to them. Even if you can't do it, say, look, I can't do it. I can do this, or I can introduce you to this person who can help you.
Yeah.
I think this is why I love about Jamie Oliver. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, I did something with his Jamie's 15 with the kids, and then that's how I came to know him. And you know, any advice or anything I'll say, he's always there to help me. He's promoted my book. I've cooked for him, you know, at the headquarters a few times. I'm doing that back again in April, I think.
Okay.
So I think he is one of those guys who gets a lot of criticism. Sometimes people or the press picks it up, and that they forget the goodness he's done.
Yeah.
And then we pick about the little thing that we, as you said, are humans. We always have ups and downs. We do make mistakes. If we don't make mistakes, we are not humans, right? So I think he is one of the guys who is fantastic, who's helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. And then I think, you know, he's such a big figure all over the world.
Yeah.
If he can pick up and message me and say, Romy, you know, fantastic, do this, or how can I help you? You know, these are the things that matter, that you have to pass it on to the generations that are coming for in the industry, you know?
It's absolutely true. And he in particular is such a lovely, lovely human. He was on the podcast a few weeks ago, and it was funny. We were sort of in a time crunch, or else I could have gone on all day with him. And what I really appreciate about him especially is he was unafraid to talk about having had to close a lot of his places, because this has been something that we've really been talking about at Food and Wine, is talking about those moments of setback and how you come back from that. And to me, for him, that's not a failure to have had to close those places, because keeping them open for that long is a huge triumph.
It is.
And so you closed a place in this past year, but you had just sort of gotten to a point where, like, and you know, this life cycle is done. So can we talk a moment about that?
I think I didn't see my daughters for a very long time.
Yeah,
because
I
practically for 6 years I didn't really see them, because I used to go home really late, and then they had to go in the morning to school. I used to get up and see them, and then by the time I was back to work. So, and my husband, who did everything, and the weekend as well, I was exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
If I was not exhausted, I was doing something to making sure that Romy's Kitchen is successful, people are knowing, and you're doing all these demos or talks or anything like that. So I think I had to make a decision, because by the time I opened and had the place running for, you know, running for such a long time, and then also in between those 3.5 years as well. So that lease was, up. Yeah. And I didn't want it to carry on another 10 years in the same place. You know, sometimes a place that you have, it has its time and you have to move on. So I think that was a decision very, I had to do it with a really heavy heart because I was really upset in many ways because I wanted maybe I could do a few more years, but then I thought, no, this just can't, I can't sustain it there. And then also, it was time to move on to another place. And I wanted to have some time with my daughters. And then in between doing that, my mom passed away and that happened. And then the book, immediately I had to come back from India after her funeral.
Yeah.
2 days we shot this book. Because the publishers couldn't change the dates. So at that time was a very dark time for me. For that year, last year was really, really difficult time for me.
Almost a year ago.
Yes.
And that was such a... I mean, you were, I think, very still, like, raw in your feelings and things. And you were a good daughter. Like, you really, really are. And I knew that it felt like you had gone... Not just to process your own grief, but take care of your dad too in a really, really special and meaningful way.
I think also, like I met Kim Severson at the Mat. She's an amazing lady. And she introduced me to features editor for travel editor Amy. So I wrote this article for New York Times, traveling with my dad in a grief where I'm grieving in a different way. He's grieving in a different way.
Yeah.
We did this travel journey for New York Times to Himachal. And it's a beautiful article.
Yeah.
If you haven't read it, please do go and read it.
We'll include the link.
Yes. It's a beautiful journey. Both of us going on and searching in India. It's like a home. It's being a tourist in your homeland. So because
I love that. I do that in the States a
lot.
You
know, because you're like America is such a big country. People don't go from one place to another. I think, and then the book came and then the TV people came to me with the Ready, Steady, Cook.
Yeah. And which is back after 10 years.
10 years. I'm so excited. So I'm one of the talents for it, one of the chefs. And they came and I said to, her name is Kat as well, Catherine, but I call her Kat. And I said, Kat, please don't give me any more bad news. I cannot take it. I cannot physically or mentally take any bad news.
Right.
And she said, no, this is good news. I'm calling you for good news. So I think that... completely again changed turn around tables. Then the book came out.
Yeah. Third printing, did you say?
Third printing, yes.
Ah, that's so wonderful.
And Jamie's given a quote for it on my third print, so I'm so excited about that. I think, and then, you know, doing so many other things, it's just sometimes we all go in dark corners.
Oh,
how you come out of dark corners. And I messaged you sometimes when I'm really feeling. I need help from someone. Who do I talk to, you know?
And it's so hard to reach out for help sometimes. Yes. I know that when I am in my darkest phases of depression and anxiety and all that stuff, I can't reach out. And even, and I know it frustrates the people who are around me and who love me and, you know, some people know better than others that I just, it's so hard for me to reach back. And I have a dear friend, John DeVore, who some people listening to this might know him. He's the one who wrote the Taco Bell essay that won all the James Beard Awards. We've been friends for 20 some years. And we both have acknowledged that we have times when one of us is at the bottom of the well. And the one who is currently like able to be at the top of the well can just like shine a flashlight.
Yeah.
Debbie, you still down there? Okay. Just like send a wave up and, you know, and let me know, you know, when it's time to like send down the rope and pick you and
lift you up. Yeah.
Yeah. And even sometimes, and he actually taught me a really beautiful and generous thing saying like, no need to respond. I'm just thinking about you because that takes the pressure off. When you're depressed, it can be really hard to form those words.
I think I am not, I don't talk to many people, as you know, but I don't know how I find comfort in you and I'll message you. I know you're there.
Yeah.
Even sometimes when you're busy and you come back and say, I'm fine.
Yeah.
So I just think there are sometimes you need some people that actually can be there for you.
Yeah.
Just like, yes, he said, wave at you and that's it. And sometimes you don't want to open to people. You don't want to talk to anybody else. I think I put my head down and I just cook. This year, like February the 10th was when my mom passed away. I just made sure I cooked. I was around my family. I was around my friends. All I did was very busy. So I didn't want to think. Of course, she's in my mind, in my head.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to. I wanted to cherish her memories.
Yeah.
And rather than being really, you know, up, down. And I thought, what can I do something in honor of my mom? And I do this haircut every two years. So I chopped my 9 inches hair and I gave it to cancer charity.
Your hair is beautiful. And
I do that every 2 years. But I wanted to do something beautiful for my mom. I think you have to find things in your way to be able to do. You know, we all are different. We all do different things. And I just think for me, staying around my friends and my family was something I think I really needed that. I didn't want it to be alone. Not a single day I did not want to be alone. So I thought I, and my neighbors are fantastic, I think. So they were all around me and we all ate food, celebrated in memory of my mom. And I think it's fantastic to do that.
Those year anniversaries or just those anniversaries in general are such, those are hard.
Hard. Hard, and also cold weathers are terrible and dark days are terrible. I think that was something, you know, I think you needed to be surrounded with family and friends and food. I think food is best thing.
It's such a good thing. And then this show, the TV that is all coming up for you is, I love it because you and I have talked about this. There are not nearly enough brown and black women on camera, and you know, and I feel like it's changing a tiny bit, but not nearly at the pace that it should. And you know, I feel like you were saying Mater Jaffrey, like, definitely broke ground for people. I think Samin Nosrat, like,
yes,
you know, having her on camera and being her glorious,
just gorgeous
joy.
Self.
She was our very first podcast guest on this, and we're coming up I think today, actually, our 52nd episode goes up, and we're almost to the year point of this. But she was such a great place to start this. But I feel like, you know, her having this incredible show that she did such a beautiful job on,
beautiful,
and such a perfect translation of this incredible book that she wrote, you know, is coming through on this. But like, to me, it just makes me want more and more and more sort of women of color and, you know, and queer people and non-binary people and just the faces we're not used to, to seeing, who should have had these shows all along.
I think people, Netflix, Amazon, anyone
dear
listening,
Netflix,
anyone
dear
listening,
Hulu, dear.
I think the men or the women sitting in those positions need to really believe in us.
Yeah.
You know, they, if you believe in, we can be really fun. Why it's got to be three men on you know, on, you know, this or channel or this cooking? I think women can cook. Why, when, you know, women, all the grandmas, the nonas, I want to cook with my dad. I want to travel with him and go to different countries and cook and make a show with my dad who doesn't speak English. It'll be fantastic,
I,
you know.
Our Kushbu Shah, who is our restaurant editor, and God, she's spectacular. And she was talking about, and nobody steal this idea, this is Kushbu's, she wants to do a show cooking with aunties.
Yes.
And
like grandmas, aunties, perfect.
Yeah, I think it's such a wonderful thing, because her point in particular, and I hope she won't kill me for talking about her idea again. This is Kushbu's idea. Let her have this. And hopefully, maybe at Food & Wine, we can do this show. Because she was saying, aunties aren't afraid to call you on stuff and tell you what you're doing wrong.
Especially Indians.
Okay. Actually, could you explain Indian aunties, please, for folks who may not know?
They are very busybodies. They want to know what's happening, what you're wearing, why you're eating, who you're dating, why you're dating, what you're dating, everything. So they are, and they're the biggest gossip aunties as well.
And they may not be your actual, like, aunt.
Yes, they're not. We have to call every who's older than you. You have to call them auntie and uncles.
I love it. I just think that's such a fun show. I would watch the hell out of that show. I would happily watch you and your dad do this. And I want to put this out to the universe to a previous podcast guest, Priya Krishna, who, you know, I asked her, like, what is, like, a thing that you want? And she was saying, you know, TV show. Like, and I think you're actually cooking for her tomorrow.
Yes, she's coming to my James Beard dinner.
She wrote this spectacular book called Indian-ish. And
yes.
Like, if we are, you know, she does these fantastic videos for Bon Appetit and stuff, but she deserves a Netflix show.
Yes. I think so many women out there, that's why I'm saying that, so many women of color, so many other women as well, you know, different women, you know, take them back. The Netflix, you just have to show, do a show, Netflix or Amazon, anybody, one needs to do a show, people of different nationalities, taking them back to their countries, and talking with their mums, their grandmas, their aunties, anyone, and talking the heritage. and then bring that heritage back, and all these women cook together. It's something beautiful that I have created called Seven Sisters. We, all the women chefs and food writers cook together every year, and we raise money for Action Against Hunger, and we all bring different kind of food on the table, and then people buy tickets and we raise the money for the charity.
Where does this happen and when does it happen?
So it happens every year in London or Bristol. It started from Bristol because I'm from Bristol, and then we had it in London. So this year it's going to be London again. So we're just thinking which month. We usually do in October or September. So just fixing the women who's going to be on the show. I just think it's fantastic to get women of any color and join together and bring the food together. And raise money, you know?
I love that. And say the charity again?
Action Against Hunger.
Okay, that's
wonderful. It's a big charity, and we feed people, you know, all over the world. So they feed people there.
Okay, and is it UK-based?
It is, yes.
Okay, yeah. And we've got some good stuff in the US. No Kid Hungry.
Yes.
It is such a spectacular
I think thing. You have to, as a small restaurant, I raised so much money for different charities because you have to do that.
Yeah. It's, you know? It's such an interesting thing. People... restaurants and chefs are always being called on to contribute this and this and that. And I don't think that consumers and realize how much is you're not just cooking food at your restaurant. You end up doing so many other things because you have to go and do PR and you want to do all the charity things. And there's so many other things that go into all of this.
I think I prefer doing it in my restaurant because I think my restaurant just sold out. And I also used to give opportunities to a lot of guest chefs who didn't have their restaurants. They would come and cook in my restaurant. I would pay them. And then also in a way, people of Thornbury wouldn't be able to necessarily meet that person. They can meet these women or men and meet the new guest chefs and do the charities. Like we have Grenfell Tower that got burnt, you know. So we raised for that, Cooking for Syria. We raised money for them. You know, Action Against Hunger, Frank Water, which is a charity based in India for clear water. So, and cancer charity. And you do it because food, you're not asking people to just give you money.
Right.
You're giving food to the people. And then people are happily, you know, donate money to you. I think that is something as a restaurateurs, as a chefs, we are able to do that.
Yeah. And that's such a beautiful way to, again, bring people together.
Yes.
And at these dinners too, it's really fun because you don't always pick who you're sitting with.
Yes.
And you end up making friends at the table.
Exactly.
And so you're doing a bunch of different dinners while you're in the States. I know you're at the James Beard House tomorrow.
Yes.
Then you're going to Nashville.
I'm also going to Philadelphia Library. I'm doing a demo and a talk there. They asked me to do that with the book. And then I'm going to Manit's place, Eat Johan House. And Manish is amazing, amazing lady. And I'm going there and she's doing a dinner with my book.
That's I can't say enough good things about this book. I have the copy in the office, and those aren't even my tabs in there. Like somebody borrowed it and put the tabs in there because she wanted to cook from it. Because it's I mean, everybody should get this. It even if you're not strictly vegan,
I mean, if you open this book, you won't even notice it's a vegan book. It's a plant based. It's the vegetarian food we eat in India. You know, so it's just really simple recipes.
Yeah. And I think any time of year we need this color in our life. All the food is colorful and beautiful, and just looking at those plates where there's something recently alive in there, like it just does such a great thing for your soul.
I think also the photographer Del Sneden did an amazing job, and Matt Inwood, who was styling and prop styling, because I just come back from India. I was very emotional with my mom and my chef Jim. We were cooking, and if you see, each photography has reflected in a very different way.
Yeah,
because it reflects my mood, how I'm thinking, how I'm sad or I'm happy. The photography has done very much justice to each and every page.
I know that this is asking your favorite child or something like that, but what are a couple of your absolute favorites out of here?
I think the parathas. My mom's, you know, was a paratha queen. She would stuff so many different ways. And all my friends still remember my mom with the parathas. It's Indian bread you can make in different ways. But also khichdi, which is a lentil and rice.
Yes.
Very dish for rich and poor people in India. So it's something very comforting. And I can... you know, relate to my mom making it when I was ill or was sad or something like that. And then there is a Began Partha, which is roasted aubergine.
Oh, good God, I want that so bad. And I see you've got an okra.
All these ingredients and are in the recipes. That's how it is.
Well, I have such a thing for okra, so much so that I have an okra tattoo on my arm, and it's red okra, which is an heirloom.
You should make an okra pickle. It's delicious.
I love okra pickle. I love it so much. I love okra in absolutely every form, and it's one of those things that also bridges so many different cuisines. Yes. That I really love. It shows up in so many different ways.
So many different ways.
And it makes me, it's a very maligned thing, because people always think like, oh, it's got a snotty texture. It's whatever. I'm like, no, well, first of all, I kind of love it.
Yeah.
But also, it doesn't have to. Yeah. There's so many different ways that you can cook it.
I think when I do, I was researching about this book, and then my next book I'm researching about.
I like when you say next book.
I think also how the traders took the seeds from one country to another.
Yeah.
When I was doing the mango, I was researching about mangoes, and the University of Oxford, one of the guys who was a professor said, mangoes also travel with pirates to different places.
Really?
So, you know, when you're researching about so many, you come to know all these things, which I would have never known a lot of things. And there are so many. I did this BBC radio program with Sheila Dillon. We did this mango program. I went to India and then we talked about the mangoes. There's so many different varieties of mango I have never seen. So, and the taste looked
different.
There's
like 400 or
500. more than the guy who was I was interviewing said 500 varieties.
Wow.
Alone he had in his own, you know,
wow
place. So I think and they all are all different shape, different sizes, different taste, different color.
And I think in the States I've only had one or two different kinds, and I've never been to India, and since I was a child my dad picked up a Mater Joffrey cookbook, and somehow it always said, you know, his dream.
Best book.
Yeah. This particular one was an invitation to Indian cooking. And
the first book is the best book. I love it.
It's such a great book. Mm. And it changed my eating life, and I know his as well. Mm. And it had always been a goal. He's like, well, someday I want to go and see India. But, you know, my mother's been sick for years. Mm. And he can't really...
You should come with me.
I know. I want to bring my dad.
Yes.
Very badly, because he was saying it's just something, you know, he wants to see, and that's sort of the goal. I mean, and it's, you know, she's still quite sick, and he can't sort of take the time away and stuff. So, you know, it's just one of those things that has loomed large in my head for a very long time. But I do want to come with you.
You should come with me. We'll take your dad.
Let's
he
bring
can come.
Let's bring a camera. Let's
he
bring
can
a...
speak. My dad will. My dad will speak
okay,
English,
imagine...
and my dad will just nod his head
if our
and
dads,
cook for you.
If our dads hang out together, I kind of love this. Like if our dads hang out together, like I want that as a goal. Like
yeah.
I need that.
If your dad likes whiskey, so my dad loves whiskey. So yeah, maybe
he hasn't been so much of a whiskey person. He likes one. He loves Sambuca.
So yeah, my dad loves whiskey. So
I can teach my dad to like whiskey. Hey, Dad, guess what we're doing next time? We did live in Kentucky for a very long time. So I'm getting the signal from our producer. So I have some questions that I ask everybody.
Yes.
And you may or may not have heard them. Play along. I know you as a caretaker, because you are the person who checks in. You check in on me because you know that I've been going through health
yes.
struggles and of all body and mind and all that stuff. And I know you care for your daughters, and you're just a person who, when I say your name, people just light up. It's just a really lovely thing, because, you know, you and sort of foster that love in the world, and you take care of other people. You're allowed to be selfish too. What is, and I believe in saying things out loud so other people can help you. What is the thing that you want that would make you happy?
I think for me to take the decision of closing restaurant and doing that, I just wanted to spend a little bit of time with my daughters. And I since closing the restaurant, I've become so busy, so more busy that I haven't been able to spend time with my daughters. I really want to just go away with them and spend the quality time which I've lost.
Yeah.
I'm very jealous of my husband, because he's become so close with them, which is fantastic, which
yeah.
is very important for dads to have their relationship with the daughters or sons. But I just really selfishly just want to be with them and somebody cooking for me.
Yes. Oh, please, somebody do this. Like I want you to have like a beautiful trip with them. And,
yes.
Can you say their names? Or
yes, they are Reet and Neve. Reet means tradition in India, and Neve means foundation.
Okay. and they're teenagers.
They are teenagers. Oh, they hate and love their mom.
Well, the thing is, you're showing them what a strong, brilliant, kind woman can do out in the world. And while you're not getting to spend as much time as you want with them right now, you're giving them such a great example of what they can achieve. And that's a gift.
I think I opened my restaurant at the age of 40. I'm 47 now, 48 this year soon.
Same? So. Oh my gosh, so we're both.
So we can do it. We can rock. We can rock the world, you know? I just think age is just a number.
When's your birthday?
22nd May.
Okay, August 1st.
My daughter is 23rd August. She'll kill me if I forget her name and her birthday. I think, women can do anything when they set their mind up.
Oh, I love it. So I ask people, have you ever cried in the walk-in? Yeah. Why is it so great to cry in the walk-in?
I think it's just I'm a very sensitive person. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I didn't cry today, but I think I'm very sensitive. I feel for others, and I just emotionally I think connected with a lot of people, and I'm a very emotional person, and I cry for anything and everything.
I always want to cry. I'm not good at crying. Maybe I need to go and find a walk-in. So what is the toughest job in a restaurant?
I think when people walk in those doors, right? Mm-hmm. If you're walking in those doors, if you have tap water, we are paying for VAT on that. And people criticize. We are become behind the social media to criticize about everything and anything, you know? I think they have to live in the shoes of the chefs who work for me, myself, or anyone. I think, the long hours, you sacrifice so many things. We all have bad days. We all have bad days sometimes. I just think people need to be kind to the restaurant industry, and we can be very, very unkind to people.
This is absolutely true.
Yes.
So what are two cookbooks? So our wonderful editor, Megan Soule, wants to turn people into really great cookbooks. And what are your two go-to cookbooks, one older and one newer?
One is the Madhu Jaffrey's first book. I just love that. And I there are a lot of books which I really like is reading and not even cooking from them. But my go-to book is my daughter's love as well, is Mary Berry's Cake, you know. Mm. She's got loads of different ones. And the one which was the first one, I've forgotten the name of it. And they go back to it, and I go back to it as well. And Delia Smith, you know, Delia's. Or Nigel. I have so many of them.
Amazing.
And Jamie's Five Ingredients and the new vegetarian book is amazing.
So
I just think you just pick up a book that actually, and also I get so many books sent, and I pick those up. And you know, I also love the Zatoon by Yasmin Khan, because she is telling you a story through food. And I like those kind of books.
She's showing humanity through food.
Yes.
So for folks who don't know who she is or haven't heard our lovely podcast with her, it's Food from Palestine.
Her first book, Saffron Trails, is a fantastic book, and no one picked it up and talked about it. It's a beautiful book. I think sometimes people just forget that there is more to than just recipes. You have to tell a story.
Yeah, and bringing that humanity to food. She does such a spectacular
beautifully
job with it. So what's your comfort food?
Cheese on toast.
Okay. And do you have a particular method? Do you toast it under the broiler? Is it in a pan?
It has to be white bread. It has to be white bread. No brown bread. And lots of really cheddar cheese in Somerset. We have really wonderful cheese. And under the grill. It has to be under the grill. I cannot have it in the pan. It just has to be crispy. And the sides really crumbs, you know, have that when you bite into that crunchy that. And then I have a little bit of chili pickle on the top.
Oh, God, that's so, I want that right now. That sounds so delicious. What is the last meal that you had that made you emotional?
I think I was recording for BBC Radio 4, and we were doing some judging, and I went to this pie place in near Manchester, and I love the pies, and it brought me back a film memory when Harry Met Sally moment. Didn't make me cry, though. It made me so emotional. Emotional in a sense that it was so beautiful, that the flavors in the mouth, the pie was so amazing. And he was a police officer who turned into cooking.
Oh, I love
and
that.
And he started pie business. And beautiful pies. It's just something that is so beautiful. And also in London, I just don't want to pick up one thing of one restaurant. We have some fantastic restaurants around, you know.
Yeah.
And then my dad's dal, you know, no one can make dal like him. He cooks in hours and hours and stays there and cooks. So I think you have to have those moments. But I think the pie moment was the moment for me.
I love that. What is the last time that somebody cooked for you in their home?
My husband, just before I came, he made pizza. Every single week he'll make pizza.
But somebody else's home, because that's your home.
Oh, my home. Someone.
Melissa
L. Hemsley. I don't know if you know about her. She's a fantastic food writer, and her book's just come out, Eat Green. And she's got a couple of other books as well. But she is the most kindest, nicest person in the food industry. And if she's ever here, you must have her. Yes. She's such bubbly, and the beautiful, you know, kindness she has, and it comes and shows in the food.
Oh, I love that. So what living musician would you want to cook for, and what would you cook for them?
So, you know, do you know Stormzy?
I do not.
Yeah, so he's like a rapper in UK. I definitely want to cook for him and Eminem.
What would you make for them?
I will make a butter chicken.
Oh, wow.
Butter chicken and naan.
Oh my gosh, like that lucky.
My daughter still can't believe I like listen to rap, 50 Cent or anybody. They can't understand. Mommy does all these things. I said, yeah, I was young once.
We're still young, damn it. I love it. And do they listen to rap?
They do. They love Stormzy, and they love a lot of, you know, they have Shawn Mendes. They like Ed Sheeran and a lot of other people, you know.
A lot of the UK hip hop doesn't come over here as much. We only, we got like The Streets, and which I liked the first few albums.
Maybe because of the accent, and I just like it because I think my daughters used to put that music all the time. He was the opening act for Glastonbury last year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So he is amazing. He's a black guy. He's wonderful. He comes from very, you know, and he is very strong. And I think his music, you should listen to him. And he also collaborates with different people. And he's just wonderful.
Wait, okay. So you said Glastonbury. I just watched a video of some young kid being brought up on stage at Glastonbury.
Yes.
That's him.
That's him.
Oh, he's phenomenal. Okay. So I do know who he is.
Fantastic. He's phenomenal.
And it was a song about a football player.
Yes.
That kid crushed it.
Yes, kind of he did. I don't know what he was on, but he did.
He admitted to being not in his entirely right mind, but that was very funny. Okay, so I do know. Yeah, okay, so I need to go and listen to more of his stuff.
He's fantastic. Yeah, he's really good.
Oh, so you have 5 uninterrupted minutes to yourself. What do you do for self-care?
I wish I could do, but I'm very hyper. What I do now is get up in the morning. I don't want to speak to anyone. And those 5 minutes, I just have a moment to myself before I do anything else.
Yeah.
Just thought of the day. Be kind to people. Try to be kind.
You are. I'll just say it out here. You are.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh. I can't express enough how much I want people to pick up this book, because it's not just recipes, it's an expression of your love for your mother, and it's that they can then, you know, help carry on that story and have this beautiful food and have some of you in their life. I feel lucky that I get to have you in my life, and this is a way that other people can as well. If they want to pick it up in stores, they can do it.
Amazon or anywhere.
Yeah.
What I love about before I go is the foreword by Alan Jenkins. You know, Alan.
Yeah.
He's never given a foreword to anybody.
Really?
And I so appreciated him giving a beautiful, beautiful foreword.
He is a wonderful writer and really thoughtful. And
yes, he is. He's a wonderful editor of Observer Food Awards, and he writes beautiful. He's a lovely author. He's written from the heart, and I think no one else would have summed my book to really write that you've said is a love letter to my mom. And it is, you're so right. You're so right about it.
So if people want to enter your beautiful world through social media, what are all the places they can find you?
Instagram. I like Instagram. I don't like to be too political on Twitter. I just like sharing and caring for people. And I can be political in my way. And I don't like fighting with anybody. I don't want to do that because I think we live in an unkind world at the moment. And being kind is what I want to do in 2020 more.
And what are your handles for?
It's Romy Gill. Very easy. 08. I think it's Romy Gill. That's it. And Instagram and Twitter as well, Romy Gill.
Yeah.
You might see my MBE on there.
Yes. Just a quick thing. How did you become a member of the British Empire?
I don't know. When the letter came, I just kept it on the side. And I just thought, another bill. My daughter opened and she was screaming and shouting. And I was like, yay! And I rang the cabinet office 3 times. And I said, is that really for me? You have not mistaken. Why do you want to give me? And they couldn't stop laughing. But it was such an amazing moment. So we went to the Buckingham Palace with my family. And I think coming from a little town in Burnpur from West Bengal to achieving all this is something I still can't believe it.
So note that when you were following her, you were following a member of the British Empire, which I just am tickled by that every time I see it. And people are going to be able to watch your shows,
yes,
too.
Yes.
So they're coming up on BBC.
On BBC One, yes. BBC One, March the 2nd, I think it starts. So very soon.
Okay, and hopefully we'll be able to pick that up in
yes.
the States. Thank you so much for coming here today and just for everything you put out in the world.
Thank you for inviting me, Kat.
And people, buy Zika. It will change your life.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to our guest today, Romy Gill. You can find her on social. We'll put all of her handles in here. Please pick up Zika wherever you buy books. Independent booksellers are pretty great. Mm-hmm. And as we've established, she will sign it for you if you find her in public. So please go and enter her fantastic world. Thank you to our producers, Hallie Tarpley, Jennifer Martinick, and Margot Gotthelf. Thank you to Douglas Wagner for our delightful theme song, and our fantastic camera people and technicians who switch around all the time, but I am happy to see any one of their faces, and they bring this all to you. And this is part of Food and Wine Pro, which, if you don't know, is a really wonderful resource for people in the industry or people who care about people in the industry to talk about what's really going on in the lives and businesses of people who bring us food and food culture. And you can go to foodandwine.com. Follow the link to Food and Wine Pro. Sign up for the newsletter, which you get a message every week from our editor-in-chief, Hunter Lewis. Occasionally, I pinch hit in there as well. He's generous enough to let me do this. We bring you the news of the week, a thought for the week, a meditation from our incredible associate food editor and meditation coach, Kelsey Youngman. And you can find the latest podcast in there as well. And sign up and subscribe. You can find this podcast wherever you happen to get them. You can, Apple, Spotify, through your fillings, however it is, where on any of these platforms, however, if you can leave a comment, if you can leave a star, that helps other people find us and lets us keep doing this podcast, and which, selfishly, I really want to keep doing. So if you can possibly help spread the word, I would be so grateful. And if there's a guest you think would be fantastic on this or a topic you'd like for us to address, I'm pretty easy to find. I'm Kitten with a Whip on Twitter, Kat Kinsman on Instagram. And really, hit me up. Let me know what is going on in your life and what you want to hear about. And the most important thing, take good care of yourself. Until the next time.